On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
The 1st of August 1981 was the birthday of music television, or of course, as now we know it, as MTV. Came to Europe 6 years later on the 1st of August 1987, so it's its European birthday as well, and emerged at a time when an Irish band was arguably the biggest in the world. And it was a station which, despite its American roots, launched plenty of Irish media careers. It even brought the MTV Awards to the Point Depot in Dublin. And at a time when anything Irish was in big demand, the station even fell victim to a little bit of Irish humour. And Donal Fallon is here to tell us all about it. Donal, fair to say that MTV did not, as some people feared, kill the radio star.
Isn't that an incredible song? One of the greatest pop songs of the 20th century, undoubtedly. And yeah, the question, did video kill the radio star? Well, look, we're sitting in Marconi House, named after the man many considered the father of modern radio. And I would be inclined to disagree.
I'd like to think the format is doing pretty okay, all things considered.
Different parts of this building are pumping out pop music as we speak. And, you know, for all the worry that MTV would kind of herald the end of music radio, there's probably a certain irony in how little music is actually on MTV today. Music radio is still around, and music television seems to be more reality television. But in the 1980s, things were very, very different. MTV heralded a new dawn in youth culture on both sides of the Atlantic. And as you made the point in the introduction, it launched on the same day, albeit 6 years apart, the 1st of August. But the first song they ever heard on MTV in America, we just heard it, Video Killed the Radio Star. And the first words they heard were, "Ladies and gentlemen, rock and roll."
And rock and roll was followed by the Buggles, which not necessarily the most rocky and or rolly of all the acts that they were to feature over time. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit more in a few minutes. The beginnings were fairly humble. We probably think now as being like the launch of a new channel being this huge behemoth, and it was suddenly available in pretty much every house in America. Far from it. In fact, it wasn't available in a lot of cities.
Yeah. Well, there's a time you can only get news talk in Dublin, you know. Things take time to get off the ground. But MTV's rise was not meteoric by any stretch. It was carried by cable operators in Kansas City, that great bastion of rock and roll. But in neither New York City or Los Angeles could you tune into MTV on its first day. And one person who was there in the very beginning, in a great oral history of MTV, she said, "In fact, if you said to someone in 1981, do you want to watch a music video? The person would have said, I don't know what you're talking about, because the phrase didn't actually exist."
Wow.
But it very quickly became apparent, I think, that this was the future. A little bit like Charlie Chaplin's great fear of the talkies, you know, that music was going in a new direction. And it wasn't just about how you sounded, it was now about how you looked. And cinematic music videos, I mean, Duran Duran, Michael Jackson comes to mind immediately.
The Thriller
too.
Video, yeah.
They took kind of full advantage of the potential of the medium. These were like 3-minute movies, if you will, the popular music on television.
Even before MTV itself, though, Ireland had its own kind of an MTV, but it was actually one that was heralded worldwide as it being among the best in the world.
Yeah, it's something they love to say in Montrose, that they did MTV better than MTV. You know, the potential of the format was recognised here at home. And it was a fantastic programme. The much-loved Vincent Hanley, Vinnie Hanley, the Irish public knew him as Fab Vinnie, a broadcaster who just really stepped seamlessly, naturally into the role of this new strange phenomenon, the VJ, the video jockey, in a way that the American competitors could only dream of. He really put them to shame. And the programme he had on RTE, the title is great. I don't know how they didn't get a cease and desist in the post from this new American station, because it was called MT USA, or Music Television USA. And that must have really annoyed MTV. But it's a 3-hour show, Vinnie Hanley interviewing American music stars and taking in New York life. And it was just so... It was so different, you know, from the grey existence of 1980s.
Even extraordinary to think that they probably had the budget for it at the time, because it did involve having the crew pretty much out there permanently. And if you're producing 3 hours of television a week from New York, even if it's padded out with music videos, that's an expensive business.
It's extraordinary. And Colm O'Callaghan, who's still a producer in RTE, looking back on it, he said that Fab Vinnie was one of the programme's two lead characters. The other was New York itself. And his scripts and interviews with everyone from randomers on the city sidewalks to the biggest names in popular music often told you far more about him than about much of the music he featured. Fab Vinnie was out there somewhere over the rainbow on Planet Fabulous having the time of his life. I mean, the greyness of 1980s Ireland and Fab Vinnie in New York. But I love this line from Colm. And on Sunday afternoons, he'd blag every one of his viewers with him into the most exclusive showbiz party of the week. It was just, it was another world.
It's lovely. Unfortunately, MTUSA didn't last as long as MTV did, because Fab Vinnie went off the air in the same year that MTV arrived to Europe.
A tragic end. Fab Vinnie dies in April 1987, the victim of the kind of AIDS crisis, which was ravaging kind of LGBT community internationally at that time. But his place in broadcasting history was very much secured. There was a lovely kind of recent homily to him on RTE. And I think he showed that music television could be done, you know, by others beyond the name itself. But in that very same year, 1987, comes MTV Europe. And there's big ambition for it. They launch it in London, you know, where else? Mm-hmm. But from its infancy, they're really interested in what's happening in Ireland. And that's not surprising, because just a few months before the lights come on for MTV Europe came the Joshua Tree. Mm. What an album. I mean, it gave us With or Without You, Where the Streets Have No Name. And it went on to sell more than 25 million copies and counting. You know, everyone has that album. And it wouldn't be an overstretch, I think, to say U2 were the biggest band in the world at the time. That doesn't mean they're the world's biggest musical act. Mm. That was surely Michael Jackson.
Soloists or the like, yeah.
But they were undoubtedly, when it comes to, you know, the drums, the bass, the guitar, they were perhaps its biggest band. So Ireland is very much in the sights, if you will, of this brand new channel, MTV Europe.
I'm just thinking in a weird way that one of the legacies of MTUSA was around this time, actually, on a Sunday morning or a Sunday lunchtime, 2FM and Network 2, as it was, used to have a simulcast of The Beatbox with Simon Young hosting it. So you'd be listening to the music on 2FM, but they'd show you the videos on Network 2 at the same time. And if you didn't have the channels or cable link or chorus or any of those things, and that was your gateway into music videos, it was a great little showpiece to have. Back on track, U2 mania and an obsession with looking for the next U2 meant that even though MTV had a very European ambit, it was very, very focused on what was going on here.
Yeah, and there's an obsession at the time in the music industry more broadly to find the next U2 wherever they could be. And Damien Corliss, who was the first Irish correspondent for the station, he writes about it was kind of difficult being on this tiny little island trying to get content for MTV. Really painful process, really long process, pitching anything to the head honchos. He says, for most Irish acts, getting any MTV exposure at all meant pitching me a story and supplying colour slides, just like the ones your auntie would show from her holidays. And it was a time before the internet, so stories had to be typed and faxed, if you could find a fax machine, and the photos sent by snail mail. So, I mean, this is one of the biggest stations in the world now, of course, but this was, you know, painful, but of its time.
And this is the unexpected intervention, or the unexpected origin that MTV Europe had on the Irish cultural history, because Hook, Line and Sinker, they do fall for, now albeit in a slightly different incarnation from the one that we know a little later down the timeline, they fall for Father Ted Crilly.
Which is brilliant.
Explain.
In this like eagerness for an Irish tale, MTV Europe end up giving considerable airtime to the Joshua Trio, who some people might remember. They were a really, really good parody act who Bono, with tongue, I think, firmly in cheek, he told Rolling Stone magazine that they were his favourite band. And one of those behind the Joshua Trio was Arthur Matthews.
Okay.
Who, you know, went on to give us
Father Ted.
Absolutely fantastic TV programming with Graham Linehan with Father Ted. And we do see the genesis of something which came later in this Joshua Trio. Corliss recounts MTV Europe filming the Joshua Trio as, quote, band chaplain Father Ted Crilly would deliver homilies during the interval. I hit the U2 pilgrimage trail with the trio for MTV. Stops included the Ballymun Towers, apparently built on magical ley lines, Bono's childhood home, where the trio paused for prayer, and Mount Temple School, where they expressed outrage that Larry's 1976 note founding U2 was not preserved on the notice board behind bulletproof glass like the Mona Lisa. I mean, can you imagine MTV following this Arthur Matthews stunt?
Wouldn't it be great if somebody could find that on some VHS or some Betamax somewhere? The idea of Father Ted Crilly existing in its pre-Dermot Morgan incarnation. Phenomenal stuff. Quickly, though, it seems, ironically, given the sort of the cultural footprint that it has grown since then, a lot of people went off MTV Europe in its early days because they thought it was too commercial.
Yeah, and I think Irish viewers who'd loved Vincent Hanley's kind of weekly journey into American popular music, they knew that this new station, it was flashier than Fab Vinny, yes, but it was also kind of lacking something. And when you compare Hanley to MTV, Corliss, who actually, remember, worked for MTV, he says that, you know, Vinny Hanley was the polar opposite of an entirely new breed of TV creature birthed by MTV. Unlike all TV presenters before them, the VJs were handpicked to be all style, no content, and instantly disposable. And within a couple of very short years, I think it was clear that MTV was, you know, kind of giving up on the M.
Which is extraordinary when you think that it's that early, because as you mentioned, you know, we think now of MTV as being a music channel that doesn't actually show any music, that it's all just showing like scripted reality
Teen
shows.
Mom, and UK, and, Teen Mom,
and
US.
Catfish and the likes. I think it peaked back in the era of the Osbournes and Jackass, because that was just a glorious turn of the millennium era. But that even the turn of the millennium wasn't the start of it, because even as early as 1992, they were already getting into this scripted reality show genre.
I found that incredible. 1992, they launched The Real World New York, which is a pretty vacuous program about seven young people living in a loft in Soho. And the reviews were kind of famously mean. A leading TV reviewer in America said something that rings true, actually, not only of the real world, but a lot of what followed. Watching the real world, which fails as documentary, too phony, and as entertainment, too dull, it's hard to tell who's using who anymore. But that direction was on the cards from 1992.
So you mentioned that MTV comes to Europe in 1987, and what follows afterwards is the creation of the EMAs, the European Music Awards, which are MTV's big landmark thing, and some of us remember the great productions of the 1990s. And by the end of the 1990s, we're having them here at home.
They're kind of losing their shine by the end of the 90s because MTV is, as by that point, the music is definitely second fiddle. But there is this great excitement in Dublin when the 1999 EMAs arrive here, hosted in the Point Depot by Ronan Keating. Britney Spears performs and sweeps the board, actually, of awards. And I think the hosting of the MTV EMAs here at that time probably tells us as much about how Dublin was changing, you know, the Celtic Tiger, as it does about anything musical. Actually, one of the MTV head honcho said, "We haven't been able to do it in Dublin until now because there hadn't been enough hotel rooms." But it was something of a nod, I suppose, to the early days of MTV, and that U2, The Edge, presented an award to Blur and the like. They pulled them in some ways. But yeah, MTV by 1999 was a very, very different beast.
Yeah, maybe it says an awful lot about the direction that those awards have taken since, that I think they've been able to host them in Belfast in one of the more recent years, which is clearly not a city that has as many hotel rooms as Dublin has now, to its detriment. MTV, without a huge amount of M, as we've mentioned, still going strong to this day.
Yeah, and when I was thinking about this slot today, I was like, hang on, well, there mightn't be a lot of music on MTV, but music videos, it's worth saying, they still remain important. And, you know, Irish acts produce really good ones, sometimes to very high standards. I loved Aidan Gillen playing a television chat show host for Fontaines. But, you know, with these videos that they now make, you know, bands like the Fontaines, they make them for the internet and for social media. You know, they're not made to be watched on television. Yeah. There isn't really a channel that's going to show them anymore. And I think one thing we can be proud of in Ireland is that our approach to musical TV, Fab Vinny, and then later on, Donald Dineen's amazing programme,
The late great Union Fitzsimons, yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic programme, and Leagues O'Toole as well. It was always more authentic, and it was always done for the love of music than a lot of what came from the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, even fast forward to Other Voices, and you can see that for all of its flaws, that RTE's legacy in that front still going strong to this very day. We've been asking people throughout the show, what is their sort of classic MTV video? To your mind, one song that you always just think of the video as being an MTV song?
When the awards were in Dublin, The Edge presented the best rock music video to Blur, and it was Coffee on TV, and that's a great video.
That's the one with the milk cartons.
The milk carton talking about. So that's a good one.
Glorious stuff. We will play out with our producer Stephen Jordan's nomination, because I think, in fairness, it's a cracking nomination, and we'll reveal that in just a minute. Donald Fallon, as ever, thank you very much. Donald Fallon, author of the Come Here to Me books, as well as Henrietta Street from Tenement to Suburbia, which you'll find in all good bookshops now. He's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find online.
On the Record with Gavin Riley
on News Talk